hope everybody has had themselves a happy Thanksgiving. Welcome once again to Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com. The number, as always, to call is 201-939-4513. On Twitter, it is hashtag Giants Chat. Joining me today, I'm Russ Salzberg, along with two-time Super Bowl champion David Deal. And, well, let's put it this way. I sat and watched Thursday night's game, and was befuddled.
Yeah.
I think that's the best kind of way to describe it. I just sat back. Listen, we know what kind of deck the Giants are playing with, and it's certainly not a full deck. But having said that, the Redskins weren't playing with a full deck either.
No.
And it was just a disappointing performance.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the way that the defense played and were able to keep a team that's been getting over 30 points a game, you know, up against great teams like the Vikings, up against the Seahawks. They did a really nice job, but at the same time, you realize and you see how much the effect of how Chris Thompson being out of the lineup really outshined the offensive line being out. When the offensive line was hurt, if you had a Chris Thompson, at least you can use him not only running the football but catching out of the backfield as an extension of the run. And you can see without Chris Thompson, obviously when you go to P. Ryan, it's a completely different offense and allows you to do more things. But, I mean, offensively, just the lack of an inability to run the football. I mean, you look at the balance, and I know that they tried to with the 24 attempts running the football and 27 pass attempts. But when you're 2-for-14 on third down, I don't care where you play, you're going to struggle, let alone when you're playing up against a Redskins team that you knocked out of the playoffs last year, and that's a division rival. So you knew it was going to be a tough slug out. It wasn't going to be one of those games that, you know, it's going to be sexy going back and forth. You knew it was going to be that type of game, but just the inconsistencies continue to show up.
Yeah, I guess we weren't fooled. I don't want to use that term. But, you know,
A more inspired performance.
The wide receivers had themselves a nice game against Kansas City.
Yeah.
You know, the backup wide receivers, TK, Tavares King, and Roger Lewis, and Travis Rudolph, each made some nice catches in that game. So, you expected some more, and you didn't get that on Thursday night. And, unfortunately, the young man who everybody is high on, I know we are, Evan Ingram, is in a slump. And he's dropping some balls. And there were, you know, very catchable first downs and where the game certainly could have been different. If a couple of those balls were caught. I mean, there was one situation where the Giants had, and I don't have the thing in front of me, but it was you're second and one in pretty good field position, and then you're third and one. I mean, you got to make first down. You're not good enough to get it whenever you can.
No.
Got to make the most of the opportunity. It was a very
and it just goes to show you how much and how hard it is now trying to function offensively without getting Sterling Shepard back. Because he is the one that will draw the attention away from Evan Ingram. And then when you look at the stat sheet, and when Roger Lewis has the same amount of targets as Evan Ingram, there's a problem. And there's a problem in the way that you can function offensively when you don't have players that challenge themselves from the way that they played last week up against the Kansas City Chiefs and then take another step forward and make progress when you have an opportunity to do it on Thursday night. When you know that your team needs you to step up, and that was one of the key factors and why you were able to beat the Kansas City Chiefs.
I'm glad you mentioned Sterling Shepard because I'm sitting here, I'm sitting back and watching a game, and I'm saying to myself, you know, we always talk, we know the difference that Odell Beckham Jr. can
without
make in
a doubt.
Game.
But
forget him. But I'm saying to myself, geez, if Sterling was in this game, it would have made a difference.
It would have made a complete difference.
A couple of those catches turns the complete landscape of the game around. But it is what it is. You've got the trip going out to the West Coast again to face the Oakland Raiders, who have their own problems.
Yep.
And but you can't worry about their problems. You got to fix what you have on your side of the ledger sheet. So what do you say? We open up the phone lines and hear what you got to say. 201-939-4513, the number. On Twitter, it is hashtag Giants Chat. Tony was first up in D.C. So, Tony, you're on with Russ and David. How you doing today?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, pal.
Hey,
what's going on?
Russ, I love talking to you, but being able to talk to David D was a true pleasure.
Thank you very much.
That is so cool.
Thank you. What can we do for you, my man?
So, three quick things, and David being a pro, you can speak to this better than anyone. First, and long story short, we have to get a running game. That play that Kirk Cousins threw for that touchdown to Josh Doctson on Jackrabbit, that was pure play action, 100% beauty. There was nothing our defense could have done. When he faked that handoff to P. Ryan, our whole defense shifted over there, and Kurt made a fantastic pass, catch. Jackrabbit did all he could do. That's what play action is, and we got to get that. There is no way Eli can throw the ball against two cover high and linebackers falling back into coverage year in and year out. We got to get a running game. So with that said, now back to the salary cap. You know, we've been hearing about how we don't have the money to bring in free agents, and I'm trying to figure out why that is. How are we so cash strapped to where we can't bring in anybody? And I'm looking at these contracts, and I think we should keep Eli till 2020 and not drop the quarterback. That's just me. But his contract is a beast. I mean, and I'm not trying to count this man's money because get paid for your work. What I'm talking about is as far as the salary cap hit. His contract, while it doesn't make him cuttable, which is fine because he shouldn't be cut, it also makes his contract impossible to restructure. So
not necessarily.
Yeah, but that's my question. And now, I haven't heard the media say that.
Tom, how many times have we
Eli about
just,
this?
I'm not trying to interrupt, but how many times you hear almost pretty much each and every year or every other year, Tom Brady restructured his contract. Tom Brady, it can be done. So that's not impossible.
So if that's the case, and look, I believe in him. I'm a fan. I think he can play till 2020. But he is getting a gang of dollars from this team. And if he wants more players around him, that franchise really needs to consider looking at everyone's contract, Eli's too, and saying, hey, if you want more talent on this team, you cannot play for $21, $22, $23 million a year. And you know, it's just the reality of it. And my last point, and you guys know college a lot better than I do, and I want to hear your opinion. And I'm only saying draft because I'm talking about the salary cap. I'm a Micah Fitzpatrick fan out of Alabama, and I think if we can't get Saquon Barkley, which I think is highly unlikely, I say get Minka. And the reason why I suggest that is because even though DRC and Ross Cockrell are for real, we just can't afford to pay everybody on this defense. If we can get a talent like that in the secondary, we can let some people go on defense. You still got an incredible secondary. You still got Apple and Joe Norris and Landon, who's going to get paid soon as well. But with Micah, he can do a lot. I mean, he is fantastic for Alabama, if Giants fans don't know who he is. We can start, you know, thinning out the defense a bit, saving some cap space, and reinvesting on the offense. But Eli needs linemen and a running back. Nothing will happen for us without more linemen and more running backs. Thanks, guys. Love the show.
All right, Tony. Thank you very much. I think Tony ought to be the assistant. Oh, I don't want to say that. Take the job away from Kevin Abrams. But Tony sounded like he was bucking for assistant GM.
No, and that's the passion that he brings. And you're right. I mean, I've watched a lot of college film this year, and you see Minka Fitzpatrick running around out there. He's got the Fang mouthpiece, and he is a hell of a football player. But once again, at that spot, regardless of where the Giants are, you know, obviously you draft not only on best available, but what is the need at that position at that time. So to sit here and say that they're going to go defensive back, you know, they're going to go offensive line, they're going to go linebacker, I mean, those are all necessities. And in regards to Eli, you know, I'm sure that with the amount that he's made, what he's accomplished to stay here, if the Giants were to approach him and say, hey, could we restructure and we're going to do something to go get you an offensive lineman, I guarantee Eli Manning would jump at that.
Well, I'm glad you said it because
you hear it each and every year. This player restructured.
Everybody's getting –
yeah,
I should say
happens.
Everybody, but people get their contracts restructured, especially it's, you know, for the good of – for the good of the team, and I don't think Eli would hesitate at this juncture doing anything. He'd be against doing anything for the good of the team. I would say, though, you know, I'm glad you brought up linebacker because, listen, if Goodson can stay healthy, they have themselves a good linebacker. But they need more linebackers on that. But if you were drafting, okay, since Tony brought it up, if you were drafting today, David, what would be your – today, okay? We're not talking about tomorrow. Today, what would be your number one thing coming out of the draft?
I mean, if they were to fall in love with the quarterback and think that this would be the franchise guy long term, then you wouldn't mind them grabbing a quarterback. Having said that, you would still keep Eli as the starting quarterback to help mold this young player. Number one, we've seen it work in Green Bay with Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre. And Aaron Rodgers did get any mentoring from Brett Favre. Brett Favre barely spoke to him at times because of the competition. But Aaron Rodgers worked, he thrived, and he learned how to play in that system. And it blossomed him as a quarterback.
You can take it further back to Steve Young,
Steve Young and
Joe Montana.
You can take it back to last year. Alex Smith, they go out and draft Patrick Mahomes.
Right.
Granted, Alex Smith is not playing as well as he did in those first 5 weeks. Why? Going back again to what he said, absolutely zero play action. Kareem Hunt isn't running the football like he did in the first half of the season, and it's completely changed the complexion of their offense. But what did it do? It's now letting Patrick Mahomes learn the offense, be groomed under a veteran quarterback who he can watch go out there, make checks, make adjustments. And what did it do? It pushed Alex Smith to be a better quarterback. So if that was the case, you would see that happen. You'd be fine with it. But you knew that Eli would be the one to help him grow as a quarterback. The other position, linebacker. You know, you talk about Sean Lee. How does one player in Dallas, you know, do so much to a defense? Pre-snap recognition. When you have a player that's experienced, that studies film, that knows what's going on out there, if you can get that pre-snap thing, hey, watch for this, look out for this, we got this, check, it makes a complete difference to the aggressiveness of your defense. 2007, prime example. Steve Spagnuolo had a huge part in it. Our D-line had a huge part in it with Strahan and Tuck and their ability to get after a quarterback. Antonio Pierce was the orchestrator of all of that because of his IQ when it came to football and his ability to diagnose things and make the checks from the back end all the way to the front end. So you could see a linebacker that can cover tight ends, that can be that tough guy that could be the leader over there, and then also an offensive lineman. When you look at right now free agency, the only player that's going to be free is Nate Solder. He's the only left tackle that is going to be a legitimate perennial left tackle that could come in. And then when you look at the draft, there's a player out of Washington, but Matt McGlinchey out of Notre Dame, who I know very well, will probably be the first tackle taken in the draft. But once again, there is still going to be a learning curve for that left tackle position as well.
Well, that's the other – I'm glad you said that. People do fail to understand. Not everybody. I don't care. And you can talk about the rookie that Tony was talking about out of Alabama.
Yes, Fitzpatrick.
There's still a learning curve.
Yes.
Just because you're a high draft pick doesn't mean it happens automatically. There is that learning curve.
For certain positions, I would say Minkah Fitzpatrick would be somebody that could come in. There would be a learning curve. But he would know how to play this type of system coming from Alabama,
right,
which Landon Collins did. So you know that he's running a pro style of defense, running the same type of coverages, the same types of blitzes. So he would be more adept to be able to come in and adjust than a different position player.
Well, just one other thing. You mentioned Antonio Pearson. I was thinking the same thing. The Giants think they have that in Goodson, but can
you
he stay healthy
on the field?
That's exactly it.
And I will say this, the numbers that you would look, if you put Antonio Pearson to 40, you'd be like, oh, that's nothing. But when you watch him game speed on field speed, it's a completely different thing. So don't let just numbers enamor you. And that's the thing when it comes to Goodson. We saw what he could do when healthy, but he hasn't been healthy.
That's been a problem. And if you're not healthy, you're not on the field, you're not helping your team. Travis in Queens. How are you, Travis? How you doing today, bud?
Hey, fellas. How you guys doing? Good. Hope you guys had a good Thanksgiving.
You likewise, buddy. Yes.
Yep. So just a hypothetical question. If you guys was Mara and the Marathon, would you guys be worried that our offense haven't scored 30 points since McAdoo?
Well, I mean, that
of course.
That goes without saying. I think it's not so much and Dave just brought up a good point here about talking about Antonio Pierce with the 40 and you're just looking at numbers. It's not so much the 30 points. This is my opinion, and Dave, you tell me what you think. To me, it's not so much the 30 points. It's just the lack of it's the lack of consistency. It's the lack of being able to make the big play when you got to have the big play. The lack of the ability to make a first down when you need to make a first down. You have a good defense, so the lack of the ability to give it some help and to do some grinding. That, to me, is the bigger problem than even the 30 points. Everybody is stuck on the 30 points. I understand that. But it's not just the 30-point plateau, Dave.
No, it's not just a 30-point plateau. And, I mean, just look at the Giants' offense had a total of, let me see, how many yards? 170 net yards. Julio Jones had more yards receiving this past weekend than the entire Giants offense.
Right.
And that's a true statement. And that's more than anything is when you become one-dimensional and every quarterback, like we had the fan call in about Kirk Cousins, any quarterback in the NFL thrives off of play action. Tom Brady, perfect example. After this past weekend's game, he has 42 completions of plus 20 yards all on play action. Every single one of them. Because what is New England's offense priority number one? Protect Tom Brady. He only played 12 games last season. He's playing 16 this year. How many times did you see two tight ends or three tight ends when Martellus Bennett was available? So they're doing whatever they can to protect it. They're getting the runs. They're getting the catches out of Lewis out of the backfield. And they're keeping defenses honest downfield.
Right. Okay. But you know, I think, like, I'm not looking at the numbers so far this year only because for the fact that we're so wounded. You know, it's so hard to really judge. That's why, you know, like, when we call in now, we get upset, yada, 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 about the games and stuff like that. It's like we're really banged up, you know.
You're more than banged up. You've crashed, okay? I mean, this is not banged up. I mean, you're talking about a complete trio of backup wide receivers. One, not two, but three. And then when we, you know, I mentioned it before, Travis, talked with David when we opened the show, you have Ingram, who's in a slump. You know, nobody's going to dispute that. I mean, it's a mess. I mean, it was a real mess to watch on Thanksgiving night.
Yeah, it was. But now, okay, so right to go West Coast offense, right your offensive line, like once you go that route, you change it up, you go West Coast, right your offensive line is supposed to be like athletic. Like, you take the year that the Broncos won that Super Bowl when they beat Brett Favre with Elway. I believe they had the thinnest offensive line, but they was athletic, you know, for the West Coast. And in that Green Bay game, the Green Bay defensive line was the most, weight combined.
Yeah, Gilbert Brown and all those guys. And then you had Matt Lepsis, the left tackle for the Broncos, I think, was the heaviest at 307. They ran strictly zone principles in a running game. They didn't run any power. They didn't pull any guards. They ran strict zone, and that's Alex Gibbs is the offensive line coach, the backside cutting, beating guys to the point, doing that stuff. Yeah, that's what they did. But they also had doing that. Didn't they have a Hall of Fame running back that was running the football? A Hall of Fame quarterback that was throwing the football, a Hall of Fame tight end that was catching the football. So, you can look at the offensive line, but when you have those pieces around you, you can be the thinnest group up front.
Right. Can I ask one more question to you guys?
Go ahead, Trev.
Real quick. What Eli did you guys like better? The Eli and David Dill, you guys' system or the Eli now? Like, do you think Eli was better when it was Kevin Gilbride's system, the type, you know, pounding, the pound game and a play action versus the West Coast?
Well, listen, go ahead, Dave, you answer. I mean, you're the one who brought it up a few times. He wasn't Eli wasn't floundering with Ben McAdoo as the offensive coordinator.
No.
I mean, it was 40. I think it was almost back-to-back 4,500 yards.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Right.
So I think also to go along with that is when you're in a system which he adapted and ended up changing to, was putting up numbers. But I think when we're looking at this season, and right now as of today, we're talking about injuries. Now that the Giants have a total of 19 players on injured reserve, I mean, obviously
right.
It minimizes your effectiveness.
But you think that's fair to say, when we bring up the 4,500, right? Eli was already a great quarterback. So, it's sort of like the Michael Jordan and Phil Jackson. Like, Phil Jackson, let's say, didn't make Mike, have the number. Like, you see the talent Mike has. You know, he was just, he came in, you could say, obviously he came in at the right time and, you know, everything went up for Mike. But like the same, like to me, I think it would benefit a quarterback to have those type of yards if they wasn't that type of caliber quarterback. Like, you know, before McAdoo came, in my opinion, I believe Eli was already a Hall of Fame quarterback. So he had all the tools already. No?
Well, you listen. Yeah. He had also won a couple of Super Bowls.
But, right.
But also the change and the adaption to this offense and what Coach McAdoo and the Giants offense run now was also predicated on not having a full intact offensive line to where you're getting the ball out of your hands quickly. You're trying to get those little flare screens to a wide receiver or to those types of players to the outside. You're using catches by a running back as an extension of the run game. So those were all things that were predicated on still trying to fix and adjust the offensive line. Now that they're injured, you're seeing the results of it.
All right, Travis.
All right. Thank you, fellas. You guys take care. Have a good one.
You
all right,
too, Travis.
You too, buddy. Thank you very much. Look, it's I've said this several times. That whether it was 1-7 or 2-8 or 2-9, it's hard to defend that. But you're going to nickel and dime everything that's wrong with everybody when the record is what it is.
Of course,
they're going to look back at Eli this and Eli that, and it's just a lot of things at this juncture. Carl in North Carolina, Carl, how you doing today?
I'm great. How you doing, Russ?
Good, Carl. With me is David Deal.
Yeah, well, first I want to say thank you, David Deal. I know you're not in the services, but thank you for your services.
I appreciate it.
You were just absolutely fantastic.
Thank you, Carl.
I've gotten to see 4 giant Super Bowls, and we won 4 out of 5, and you're an integral part of it.
Thank you very much, Carl. What can we answer for you? What are your questions?
First, with the offensive line, I don't want it to be adversarial, but Russ, you said last to a couple of callers that they didn't complain last year about the offense, but I did.
No, I mean, hold on a second, Carl. What I said was people weren't complaining a whole lot about the Giants last year. At 11-5. Continue. All right.
Yeah. Well. It was really, to me, it was the offense, and like 90% of it. Well, 50% of their plays was Eli throwing the ball at the feet of offensive linemen. And besides Odell making a big run, on a catch that he got away with, it was that and the draw plays that went for nothing. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't impressed at all. I was glad they were 11-5, but I didn't think they were going to go anywhere. So,
your point?
With that being said, I think Jerry Reese has ignored or reached on the offensive line and completely reached at linebacker. And, somebody's got to be held accountable for that. We've not been able to stop anybody out of the backfield, in the middle of the field, because we don't have linebackers that can do it. And it's been ignored for 4, maybe 6 years now. And offensive line also. I don't think, as good as they are, I don't think Justin Pugh or Reston Richburg could start on Dallas. They couldn't take a position from anybody. I think they're undersized, and they don't play well to the running game as good as they are. What do you think?
Well, I think, number one, I think with what happened now with Weston Richburg being hurt and seeing the way that Brett Jones coming in and playing the way that he did, I had no hesitations right away watching two game films saying that Brett Jones played better at center than Weston Richburg. That wasn't anything against Weston
right
Richburg.
Away.
I said that immediately. He has the leverage. He's smart. He's tough. He gets his feet out of the hole, and he gets that movement at the point of attack. Justin Pugh's versatility is what helps him out, but I believe he is a better guard than he is a tackle because he doesn't have long arms to keep long defensive ends away from him that go with that one-arm stab. But to sit here and say that they wouldn't start on other O-lines and they wouldn't start on the Dallas Cowboys O-line, I've watched their left guard, I've watched their right tackle, and they haven't been consistent all season. But in regards to that, they were banking on Eric Flowers taking the next step, which he's played a lot better, but he still, with his technique, goes up and down. They were banking on Bobby Hart stepping in and playing much better this season. That didn't happen with his work ethic and his ability to get it done. So having banking on that, yeah, you would say that it would be the issue, and that was the problem.
Thanks for the call, Carl. I don't think I'm going out on a limb saying that as far as your O-line goes, the most productive guy for the time he's played has been this season has been Brett Jones.
Yeah, without a doubt. He's been the most consistent, and his ability to come in, play tough, play smart, guide and direct the offensive line up front, it's been very, very eye-opening, and he deserves a lot of credit because, you know, think about when they brought him in, a guy from Canada, he's going to be able to come here. He's thrust into the starting lineup and has done phenomenal.
Very, very well. Brandon in Jersey. Brandon, yes. How are you? What's going on, buddy?
Yes, how you doing? Yes, what's going on? Now, I want to look at the overall big picture. First of all, I want to say I disagree. I believe the Giants were ready to win that game last year in the playoffs, and it was misfortune that the receivers let Eli down in that game. I believe we would have advanced it at least to the Super Bowl. I believe we would have got there last year. Rather we would have won it or not, that's something different.
Well, now, you know what, Brandon? I will say this to you, though, and I'm glad you're the guy who brought it up. You're right. A couple of drop balls by not arguably, your best player on the team.
On third down.
Yeah. Really? So, yeah, that's a very, very good point.
That throw down the seams to Will Tye.
I believe we could have won that game if everybody was focused enough, you know, the way how Eli was. Knowing, because follow Eli, he's been there before.
Everybody, all Giants fans, everybody getting ready for that game has said, we need playoff Eli. Playoff Eli
exactly.
Showed up in Green Bay. He was there. Receivers drop balls. If Will Tye catches that ball down the seam, he starts to break cover two, and you're able to run the football successfully then, and you soften up Don Capers' defense, it would have been a completely different game.
Now, could I move on to the
– go ahead.
Can I move on now?
Go ahead, Brandon.
Okay, now, what
you
I would
call,
like to
Brandon,
say now,
this is your time, man. What do you mean, can you move on?
I want to tell it like it is, man. Look, I believe – Giants fans, we got to give McAdoo another year. You can't give up on him in 2 years and say everything is just his fault. Yeah, he was stubborn this year, but I believe, me personally, that he learned from this year. This is just only his second year on the job. Give him another year. Give him another drive. Give Reese another chance. Now, look, what I would do is I would sign Nate Solder in the free agency. Me personally, I get Solder at left tackle.
Solder.
Solder. Get him at left tackle. Move Flowers to right tackle. I wouldn't sign Pugh back. I wouldn't sign Richburg back. I will get the guy out of the draft, the Notre Dame kid, and I will sign Fluka back at right guard. I will put them two at the guard positions and put Flowers at the right put Flowers at right tackle and Solder at left tackle. And don't draft no quarterback in the first round. Eli got at least 2-3 more years left in him. Build around this team. I'm telling you, get more picks because that's how we could build this team up within 1 year and get the linebackers that you're talking about, the running back, the cornerback, and maybe another pass rusher too.
And that's something that you'll see in the draft. And you know, when we talked about that with that pick that the Giants will have, you know, will they be able to move around?
Picks with,
what's that?
Human more, accumulate more picks to build out of this draft.
That's it.
Don't
that's...
get another one this year. Try to get at least two
Brandon,
ones this
Brandon,
year.
Brandon, can I talk,
two,
Brandon? Two. Brandon, Brandon.
Hello?
I'm about to say the same thing that you're saying, Brandon. You called to ask us for our opinion, and I'm giving it to you, bro.
Right.
So, no. So, what I was going to say. Brandon, can I answer, my man? Can I please answer?
Okay.
Brandon,
all right.
Look at what the 49ers did last year in the draft and how they were able to manipulate right now the way that they were able to pick and get long-term guys with the picks that they had. They're able to get a defensive tackle in Solomon Thomas. They're able to move and get Reuben Foster late in that draft. But there was a big difference with their ability to be able to do that. John Lynch and Shanahan knew it was going to be a process and had 6 years guaranteed, and this was their first draft. The Giants right now don't have that asset. We don't know what's going to happen. We don't know what's going to happen to the general manager and head coach after this season. So when it is a stressful situation and it's a quick turnaround, there's certain things that you're going to have to do in order to make that turnaround happen immediately, getting impact players and getting impact guys. So when they came out a couple weeks ago and when the Giants said, oh, we're looking at quarterbacks, we got to scout them, everybody went crazy. You scout quarterbacks in every position in every single draft. What I like is what it's doing. It may make 31 other teams think that they may want that quarterback, and they may make a move to move up with the Giants and make a trade to get that quarterback that they may want, whether the Giants want that player or not. But sending the message out there does a lot.
Thanks for the call, Brandon.
And I believe – hold on one more thing.
Go ahead.
I believe with the philosophy, even when Odell comes back, this has to be turned into a run-first team. Find our identity quick, beginning the next season, quick. With Selly at the offensive coordinator, I believe we should give the coaching staff at least another year, like I said.
All right, Brandon.
Establish the run first.
You need the guy to establish the run first, but thank you for the call, Brandon, as always.
Thank you.
You know, you bring out – that's the point. When Jerry Reese went out 2 weeks ago and then he came back for the red eye for the KC game, when he went out 2 weeks ago, everybody's assuming he was going out with the notion that drafting either Donnell or the kid from UCLA, Josh Rosen.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going out there to see what they have and thinking, okay, what does somebody else need? You're right.
Not to mention, somebody else need? And also, what does watching film and watching games that way, that's great. But seeing a player play live, seeing the way that they handle themselves around their teammates, how are they on the sidelines? Do they walk? Do they communicate? Are they leaders? And you want to go see them in a spotlight game like a USC-UCLA game that has that rivalry and has that intensity, because you're seeing things that you can't identify in film because you're watching that player's body language, or the things, that the attributes that they have outside of just numbers and who they are as a football player on film.
You know, and this is not directed at the Giants. Maybe I'll digress in for a second. You know, what the Giants need or what they don't need. I'm just talking in general. You're talking about young quarterbacks there, and there is no doubt that both Donnell and Rosen are going to start in the National Football League. But to me, I don't know, David, there's still a difference of being a sophomore and coming out and playing as opposed to an extra year or two. I think that experience, especially at a major program, you know, pays dividends.
Without a doubt. And the thing that you've continued to see year in and year out, when players are thrown into the heat of the fire, when they're thrown right out there, if they don't have the mental toughness and the ability to handle adversity for their first year, when you are the spotlight, when you are the first-round draft pick, we've seen the confidence level scar players that could have been great college players because they've never been able to overcome it. Prime example, Mr. David Carr, thrown into the fire at Texans, has no offensive line around him, has sacked the most, and he was never, as a quarterback, able to overcome that.
Never. You know, and then you had Mark Sanchez, who, quite frankly, came out had some early success, and then when adversity struck, didn't know how to handle that. So, I mean, there's a difference between being a seasoned college player and a guy coming out after just a year or two. I that's just my own opinion. I think it makes a significant difference.
And not to mention, when you're looking at Darnold at the quarterback position, he still had 12 interceptions this season right now. That's a high number when you're looking at a quarterback that's thrown half the amount of touchdowns and 24 in interceptions. It's a big question mark. He's going to be facing elite coverages, elite corners, elite safeties and nickel players that he's not seeing right now in college.
As good as he is in college, there's a difference. That's why all those great players in college don't make it in the pros. There's a reason for that. Adam in Columbus, Ohio. Hello, Adam. You're on with Russ and David. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing very well, guys. How are you doing this afternoon?
Good.
Doing
what's
great.
Going on?
What's up?
Well, I wondered, and one of the previous callers touched on it a little bit. You know, one of my questions was going to be, is it worth trading down in the draft? I mean, and I think there's a misconception that just because someone's a top five or top 10 pick, they're automatically good. I mean, look, if the talent's not there, it might just not be the year to get a quarterback or a lineman. But that brings me to my question, I guess, particularly for you, David. I'm curious to your opinion. Any thoughts on this kid, Connor Williams, from Texas? Is he good enough to justify a top five pick, assuming we want to draft and try to bolster the line through the draft? What do you think of that guy? Is it worth that? Is it make more sense to trade down at this point? Obviously, you don't know what the options are going to be or the compensation for the trade would be, but you know, just spitballing a little bit here, looking forward to the draft, wondering what your thoughts are.
Well, obviously, he's played really well, and he's in that top upper echelon guys that are in the top four right now of what they're seeing in offensive tackle prospects. It's him. It's Orlando Brown from Oklahoma, but he's a monster. He's like 350, 360. So you know he's going to be a right tackle guy. And then the kid from Washington, Trey Adams, he is another one. He's more of a thinner guy. He's more of a guy that can probably project and play possibly left tackle. He's one of the ones that has a higher grade right now than Garrett Bowles, who was the first tackle drafted last year. And then McGlinchey. I think McGlinchey has the movement and everything, but I think that long-term he's a right tackle. So he's an unbelievable run blocker, but it's his pass protection that has to show up. And when he had matchups up against like Harold Landry or some of the Georgia guys that had that elite speed, he had some difficulty.
Do you think then, I mean, it sounds to me like you think Connor Williams is kind of the leader of that pack. Do you think
I think he's in the top four of that pack. I never said that he was the leader of that pack.
Who do you go with then? If you're the Giants and you're looking to draft, is there anyone good enough to justify that pick, or do you think it sounded like from the earlier caller kind of you were leaning toward the school of thought to maybe trade and get more volume and get more value that way?
I mean, if I was to do it, I mean, I would try to get more volume because you have so many positions in need. As long as you can keep two of those draft picks in the first round and getting possibly another draft pick in the third round of this draft. So that would be something that would definitely tempt you because right now with the holes that you need to fill, not only offensively, but the other holes on the defensive side of the ball, I mean, there are more picks and there are players out there that may fall into the teens that are just as good but weren't a player of need in the top 10.
Adam, I don't know how old you are.
34.
Okay, well, then I don't think you're going to remember Tony Mandridge.
I think everybody remembers Tony Mandridge.
Okay, but Tony Mandridge was, I mean,
the incredible bust.
That's exactly right. Tony Mandridge was a can't-miss, surefire. I mean, he was the Packers' first-round pick. The offensive lineman, it was like, am I right?
Like, yeah,
the incredible,
monster, yeah.
An absolute monster, couldn't miss. I think he was the first pick. He was the second pick overall behind Troy Aikman. A bust. I mean, he was your prototype. What you would dream about for an offensive lineman, he was the guy. As David just said, the
but
incredible.
Steroids ball. Caught up to him. He had injuries in the NFL, couldn't play at that same level, and his career was over.
Over. You know, so like we were saying, it's that step up. There's a reason why all the star players, including Heisman Trophy winners in college, don't make it in the pros. There's a reason. because the sure. the game is different.
Sure. Well, that's all I got. I appreciate you taking my call. I love the show. Look forward to the next one.
Thanks,
all right,
man. Have a great
Thank
one,
you,
Adam.
Buddy. Take care, pal. Mandrews was it.
Oh, yeah. I was a kid. I'll never forget.
That's what
remember
I was
they had that Michigan State bus behind him? He was on the front cover of Sports yeah. Illustrated.
Everything.
He looked like a 300-pound bodybuilder.
Yeah, that's
– I mean, he was huge, a 300-pounder running a
– He was sub, Charles Atlas. Yeah, yeah,
I mean, he was everything.
Yep.
He was a freak. And, you know, you saw it catch up with him in the NFL.
Chris in Syracuse. Chris, how you doing, buddy?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
What's up, Chris?
On, Chris?
Hey, one real quick question before I get started. I got a good friend of mine, 60-year-old lifelong Giants fan, terminal cancer. He's not going to make it the next season.
Oh,
and he's going to the Dallas game, and I don't know how to get started. Is there any way, like, where do people go to try to set something up for somebody like that?
You know what? Send me a direct message on Instagram, please.
Okay. I appreciate that very much.
Yeah, I'm very sorry to hear that.
When does he go? What game is he going to?
It's just Dallas.
Dallas
game?
Dallas game.
Which, by the way, has been turned a 1 o'clock game.
Yep.
If he's going, it was listed as a 4:25 game. It is now a 1 o'clock game, Chris. Just
okay.
Because of the flex of the Rams game.
Okay. Yeah, I'll do that as soon as I get off. So real quick on my points. And thank you very much, David. That's awesome. I'll send you a message. Real quick, somebody needs to tell the New England Patriots they got to start tanking and get a high draft pick in order to win anything because they must be doing it wrong. Okay. Number two, I'm going down with the ship with Eli Manning. I love the guy. There's only one thing about his game this year that is really, really frustrating to me, and that is flats and drags. It's just so crazy to me. Like he's put all these balls in these crazy places, long balls, all sorts of different things. And for whatever reason, it just seems like little swing passes out into the flat or a little drag coming across. I don't know. It's just,
low and tight
things.
To the ground, cleat level. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. It's just been one of those things. But now one of the things I've called and I kind of talked about last week, but I was so excited that you were on today, David, is I wanted to get your opinion on this. I've been like super critical of Jerry Reese's ability to assess offensive line talent and the players themselves. And you know what? The more things have kind of unfolded this year, I really have kind of shifted my wrath, I guess, to more schematically. And what I mean by that, it seems like I just don't know if the focus on running the ball and being balanced and all of those things were that important in the springtime and in the summertime. It seems like we were just so stubborn with wanting to stay in the scheme, do things the way that McAdoo wanted to do them, and force a square peg into a round hole because we had this dominant receiver and we're just going to do this come hell or high water. And I think that we were too slow to adjust, and then, of course, by the time we did, all the injuries had set in. But I wanted to get your take on how much of the struggles or the fact that they just didn't focus on run blocking enough, because I think one of the highlights of the team in this horrendous year has been the offensive line. So what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, that's definitely a great question to bring up because when you talk about that, Chris, the ability to adjust and adapt, something that they had to do this season with all the losses at that wide receiver position. And I'm not saying that they went through spring ball and training camp with the expectations, oh, we're not even going to work on running the football, we're going to throw it. That's definitely not the case. The emphasis was clearly put more on airing it out, getting up tempo, pushing the tempo of the offense, getting the ball out to your receivers out in open space and using it as an extension of the run, getting the quick slants, the screens, because of those were the players that you had. And when you don't have those players and then you have to adapt and adjust and then try to change with the injuries, it is very difficult because that isn't the way that you practice throughout the entire offseason getting ready for this one.
Then your experience as an offensive lineman, how much of a big difference would it make in your run blocking ability if it wasn't really a focus during the summer? And do you think as those reps have increased, that's why we've seen better run blocking? And do you think that was a mistake not to focus more on it?
Well, I mean, we could sit here and say a lot of things are a mistake when you're looking at the record and the way that they're not putting up numbers offensively. That's easy to do. But, I mean, yeah, those are things that it takes time and takes work to do day in and day out in practice. Because as an offensive lineman, I know it's a cliche. Every offensive lineman loves the football. All they want to do is – and there's a reason why. Because you can be the aggressor. You're not sitting back and kicking 3, 5, 7 steps and waiting for the defensive end to come to you. You're going after them in the first to second quarter, and you're starting to wear those guys down. To in the third and fourth quarter, you can run play action. You can jump set them. You can go after them. And all of a sudden, those guys who are 235, 240, 250 pounds, they're not holding up the same way for a four-quarter game.
Yeah, isn't it, Dave, almost like, you know, with that run blocking situation, as an offensive lineman, and I'm not actually doing it, but it's almost like, yeah, you get to throw the first punch.
Yeah, you're imposing your will on them.
Right.
Instead of sitting back and, you know, you always say at the tackle position, it's a controlled aggression because you're kicking. There's always a landmark, whether it's at 3 yards, whether it's at 5 yards, based upon your protection. And then you're initiating the fight instead of right at the line of scrimmage, being able to come off and tee off on somebody.
All right, Chris.
Thanks a lot, guys. Have
Absolutely,
a great day.
Chris.
All right, thank you. That's a good way to put it. But
yeah.
I never even think about it that way. But, yeah, like you're running a game. Come on. Boom.
Prime example. Look at the way now that the New Orleans Saints offensively have been able to play because of the way that Ingram and the way that Kamara have been running the football. They've been able to take so much more pressure off of Drew Brees, but they can adapt and go back to the passing game all based off of play action because now their tackles can get after people. They don't have to sit back every time.
Down to South Carolina we go, check in with Steve. Steve, how you doing today, bud?
Doing good, guys. How y'all?
Good.
I got a comment for most of the fans that are up in arms about us scouting Darnold and Rosen and quarterbacks in general. And I hope you guys agree with this opinion, is that in defense of the scouts and the front office, if they don't go evaluate these players and we miss on them and they become an MVP, we're going to hear a lot more flack than if we go get them and get a bust.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well,
I was saying, you evaluate everybody, Steve.
Right,
every player's up on the board. Every player's evaluated. Everybody has their own, you know, their own punch card, their flip thing that a scout has looked at games, so that when it does come and we see certain players dropping, certain players going up, people that you didn't think that were going to be available, you have a full draft report on that player, and you've seen and watched them physically in person, whether it's your scout on film, so that you can give them a grade and give them that assessment. You know, do we think that this is going to be a return on investment immediately? Is this a project? Is it going to take a year or two? Those are all things that all players go through when they're looking at the draft.
Yeah, you know, and I think it was either Lance or John a few weeks ago. I called in. We were talking about the draft, and you know, I think we should go linebacker. And they said, I don't, you know, with a high draft pick, but look at the linebackers for the Giants. I mean, come on, Carson, Banks, Lawrence. I mean, Antonio Pierce. I mean, unbelievable linebackers, and they really helped our team. So I don't see why we want to go out there with the top 10, not 3 or 4, but 10 pick and get a linebacker.
I agree with you there. I would have no problems with that because we've seen some of these linebackers that were taken in those early 10 to 15 to whatever really make impacts on their team. You know, number one, I sit here and I watch each and every week. I watch Ryan Shazier from the Pittsburgh Steelers. He is a freaking stud. Anthony Barr on the Minnesota Vikings is a freaking stud. Anthony Barr was a outside 3-4 kind of hybrid defensive end who had his hand in the ground. He's covering tight ends and running backs out of the backfield right now at a high level. So, like I said, at that 1-2-3 spot, no. But if you were able to move and get some more picks, I'd have no issues whatsoever in picking a linebacker.
Thanks for taking my call, guys. Always love the show.
All right, Steve. Thank you.
Take care.
But again, like when you say, well, who is that linebacker out there now? Is there one guy in college that you?
That's the one position I have. I've been doing offensive guys now. I haven't gotten into linebackers and defense.
The reason I say that because, like you say, maybe there's nobody worthy at that position of being a 1, 2, or 3.
I don't think so.
Right. And that being the case, you know, it's Steve brought up the point. You know, it's not just looking at your high picks. I mean, the scout's job is to look at all picks, going right down throughout your rounds to undrafted free agents.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, that's making your money and earning your money. Listen, the Giants did okay when they drafted a guy like Victor Cruz. Snacks Harrison.
Victor was a free agent.
Yeah, free agent. Yeah. Snacks Harrison. But I'm saying you're scouting those. Snacks Harrison was an undrafted free agent.
Yeah.
I mean, that okay, he wasn't drafted by the Giants, but he was an undrafted free
and
agent.
And I just looked up inside linebackers. I've seen Josh Allen, Kentucky. I've watched two of their games. Great player, runs sideline to sideline. You know, he's kind of compared to like a Leonard Floyd type of player, you know, that kind of hybrid. But he, once again, he is a first, second round guy. He's not a top 10 pick. Malik Jefferson, I remember watching out of Texas. He's a second, third round guy. Let's see, Matthew Thomas, Florida State. I've seen him play. Once again, Burks out of Vanderbilt. I've watched him play, but these aren't top five, top 10 players.
You know, Travis brought up a good point. You know, I'm watching a game the other night, and I'm looking at the walking wounded that they had playing. And I know everybody, you know, it's next man up and this and that. But I'm looking at that offense, and I'm saying to myself, you know what? You can put Bill Parcells, Vince Lombardi, Tom Landry, put them all in a shaker, and Belichick, for that matter, put them all in a shaker and shake it up. With what they have there, they're not winning.
No.
They're just not. That is a beat up, as battered and bruised a team as you will see. Again, I'm not making an excuse for it. It is what it is.
I don't know about that.
Go ahead, what?
The team I was on in 2003, my rookie year, by the end of the year, I think we had 26 guys on injured reserve.
Is that right?
Oh, yeah. Last game of the season, no joke. Sitting there, you remember the old leg over, you know, the lower back stretch. My left.
Right.
I lean over. I look to my right. I had no idea who was stretching next to me.
Really?
Still to this day, I have no idea who it was. We signed him on Saturday. He was starting on special teams on Sunday. And when I was in the huddle looking around, the only starters that were left were me, Amani Toomer, and Tiki Barber, three of us.
Yeah, no.
That one was rough. That one was rough.
But you, listen, you go out, you're trying to compete.
Absolutely.
But it is what it is.
Yeah.
And it's a very, very difficult situation. I, you know, then I almost don't want to bring it up because every time you do it, it opens up a can of worms with the quarterback situation. Because I happen to believe this is Eli's team. It still remains Eli's team,
yep.
And it should be. Having said that, you know, people talk about Darnold and Rosen. We haven't seen him, okay? We got to see him in preseason. But I don't know. I don't know. If
Davis Webb
might very well be in the Giants thinking their guy for the future.
Yeah, and believe me, that there's, you know, the one thing that you're always asked is, you know, oh, we got to make the switch. Oh, you know, you see things in practice that let you know whether a quarterback is ready to step in at the quarterback position or not. How are they handling the huddle? Are they confident in what they're calling? Not to mention what Davis Webb is doing. He's running the scout team offense. So he's going up against the starting defense. He's going up against the blitzes from the Giants defense. He's going in third down positions up against the Giants starting defense. So there are ways to evaluate in practice whether this player's ready to step up or not. Having said that, I know that they're very high on Davis
Extremely
Webb.
Extremely high.
The way that he works, the way that he prepares. You know, I was in here yesterday on the Giants players' day off. I saw him in the film room for over 2.5 hours, just sitting there breaking down film and Eli coming in with him and doing everything. So he has the work ethic. He has what you look for in a quarterback, but you do see a sample size in practice based upon their preparation and the way that they play. And when you add more stuff to the packages for him in practice, you can see if they're ready to translate and jump into the starting spot. You know, so that's a possibility.
And I don't remember any other situation where they put a quarterback's locker right next to Eli's, and from day one, but they put Davis Webb right next to Eli's for a reason, you know, for any and everything, on the field, off the field, in between, the whole ball of wax.
And Eli's a veteran leader that embraces that and is teaching him.
You know, it's a difficult situation, and then in fairness, if you're going to put, what would Davis Webb had done? with that team on Thursday night. I mean, you want to find out what a guy can give you with a group of backup wide receivers? I mean, really, what do you think you're going to get?
I know.
I mean, it becomes a very, very difficult situation. So, Dave, let me ask you this. Where do you go from this point on? You're 2-9, okay?
Yep.
Where do you go with five games left from this point on? If you're a player, what is your mindset? And if you're the coach, what is your coaches? What is the mindset?
Well, right now as a player, you're focused on this week to get ready to go play a game in Oakland up against a team that just beat the Denver Broncos. For the first time in the year, they have an interception going into this game up against the Broncos. Didn't have a single interception on the defensive side of the ball until Navarro Bowman broke that one. So they had five takeaways up against the Denver Broncos. They sacked the Denver Broncos quarterbacks five times. Marshawn Lynch got things going on the ground for him. I had 26 attempts for 67 yards. Not a huge number, but what did it do? They ran the football 37 times, only throwing the football 24 times. That monster offensive line, Hudson, Penn, KO Assembly, they were able to come off of the line and tee off on the Denver Broncos defense. So if you're a player, you're evaluating film, you're looking at this Oakland Raiders team, and you're putting yourself in the best position to go out and practice and play your best football, because if you go out to Oakland, you're going to be challenged as a man. And on your flight home, you better not have a single regret, because right now everybody's under a microscope, and you better be prepared for a long flight home, ready to see what you put on film if you didn't go out and sell out and prepare the way that you should have. And that implication won't only be on the New York Giants team, but all 31 other teams that are watching this film, evaluating you as a player. They're going to see who you truly are when adversity hits.
Yeah, I, you know, we didn't even touch on it today. You know, Fluker now.
Yeah, on IR, yep.
We don't know what the situation is, but it doesn't look good with Janoris Jenkins. This is a Murphy's Law season for the New York Giants, folks. It's, what could have gone wrong has gone wrong up to this point. It is what it is, and I'm not saying be happy and accept it, but it is what it is. It's just,
yeah,
it's one of those lost seasons. And quite frankly, I can't explain who could have looked back coming off of 11-5 and the enthusiasm, what everybody felt coming off the season, and you had Sterling Shepard, you had Brandon Marshall signed,
yeah,
you had Odell.
The entire defense back with JPP
coming off that season,
yep.
Evan Engram, everybody. There was no negativity. You weren't hearing a lot of whining and belly aching about what was going to be in this upcoming season. Unfortunately, we're hearing it now. But again, that is a wrap on this show. As always, on Big Blue Kickoff here on Giants.com, the number to call is 201-939-4513. On Twitter, it is hashtag Giants Chat for my good friend and two-time Super Bowl champion David Deal. I am Russ Salzberg. I will see you tomorrow.